Hey, what's up, guys? It's Jordan with the Loaderman Resource Podcast, show number 52. And I am pumped that you are here. Wait, are there 52 weeks in a year? I mean, we haven't been going quite a year yet, but man, 52 weeks a year. Is that right? I think that's right, man. That's a big deal. But I launched with three, so we got two more to go for a full year. But that's right. I started in May. Exciting stuff coming up. Oh, my goodness. Well, hey, happy episode 52. I am pumped that you are here today, not only because this is episode 52, which seems like a big deal to me for some reason, but also we have Brian Wallace, the president and CEO of the Coin Laundry Association, joins us on the podcast today, and we talk laundromats. It's really, really interesting stuff that we talk about today. I know you're going to love it, and I know you're going to get a lot out of it. So I cannot wait for you to hear about that. But before we get there, real quick, I just want to say, man, there's been a ton of stuff going on with Laundromat Resource lately, both behind the scenes and also in front of the scenes. Is that like a thing, in front of the scenes? but just a couple of quick things. First of all, I want to just get back on that brainwashing train that I've been on for a lot of episodes now. But get over to the forums, ask a question, answer a question. There's a lot of really awesome conversations happening in those forums over there, in the Laundromat forum, in the commercial real estate forum, in the repairs forum, and also in the new member introductions forum. Again, I just want to highlight, I mean, first of all, welcome to all the new members. We got a bunch over this last week. A couple I just wanted to say welcome to is Frank and Jignesh. I hope I'm saying that right, but welcome to you guys. I know you introduced yourselves over on the introduction forum. One of the cool things happening over there on the introductions forum is that people are starting to find each other in similar areas. And that's just like by far one of the coolest things that I've been seeing. So, you know, if you're looking to connect with other laundromat owners or other people interested in buying a laundromat, make sure you check out that new member introduction forum and see if there's anybody who's popped up in your area. Or if not, maybe introduce yourself and let people know where you're, you know, where you lay your head down, where you're from. Where you're from is probably an easier way to say that. Let people know where you're from and, hey, try to connect over there with people in your area. Super, super cool. Makes me so jazzed that that's happening over there. Also a lot of really great conversations happening. So go jump in on those. One that was really interesting, I think popped up this week. Maybe it was last week. And I think it was this week, was how to value a laundromat that's not making any money. And I thought that was a really intriguing, topic, and I bet there's going to be a lot of different opinions on that. So go join that conversation. Some of the others, go ask a question, answer a question. If you're listening to this, like right when it's coming out, this comes out every Tuesday, in case you didn't know. If you're listening on Tuesday, what is it? April 20th. Or maybe early on Wednesday, the 21st, make sure that you join myself and Dave, Laundromat Millionaire Mins. We have a live Q&A going on. We do one every single month. So even if you're listening to this after the fact, head over to my YouTube channel, Dave's Laundromat Millionaire's YouTube channel, and subscribe so that you know when these are coming up. But I'll also put a link in the show notes, which will be at laundromatresource.com/show52. And if you're on YouTube, I'll also put it down in the description down below. So you can click on that. Make sure that you hit that notification bell so you can join us for the live Q&A, either here in April in 2021 or in our future ones, because we do one every month. And then also just a quick little reminder that I do a free live webinar every Thursday. You can sign up at laundromatresource.com. There's a form right at the top there that you can sign up in. Okay, that was just a whole bunch of stuff I threw at you, but I just want to let you know there's a lot of cool stuff happening. All this stuff is geared towards helping you find financial freedom through laundromat ownership. So make sure you're jumping in and being a part of what is going on. And there's more coming. Super excited about all that. But without further ado, let's just jump into it with Brian Wallace, the president and CEO of the Coin Laundry Association. I know you're going to love it. All right, Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, Jordan, everything's great here in the Chicago area. It's a little bit of a rainy day, but we can always brighten it up with some laundry talk.
That's right. That's right. Nothing says sunshine and warmth like laundry talk. Maybe we should talk about dryers to kind of just warm things up a little better. I don't know, but I love that. I am actually this is a little known fact, is I am a long, long time Chicago Bears fan. I think I jumped on the bandwagon way back 85, 86 when they won the Super Bowl and have pretty much regretted it ever since because I have not won anything since then.
But you and me both, yeah. one of my brothers has season tickets. So we've definitely, had some good times over there tailgating and enjoying the games. Not often in a winning capacity, but it's nice to get out there on the lakefront and enjoy some football. So I'm a long-suffering fan too. So we'll keep at it. I'm a Cubs fan too. We finally got that World Series in 2016. So anything can happen.
Yeah, that was a big one for you guys. I'm a Dodger fan, so I can't sympathize with you there, but we'll stick with the Bears and have some solidarity there.
No doubt.
Well, hey, I thought it would be awesome to just start this off by taking us way back in your life. And I mean, I kind of want to hear the path and how you got to where you're at now, because, you know, obviously we're in kind of a little bit of a niche industry here. It's a little bit random. Whenever I tell people, you know, that I own laundromats, you know, people are always like, what? That's so weird. That's so random. Right. And so people don't think this industry when they think of business. So I'm curious, can you take us back and maybe weave a story for us about how you ended up where you are?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. I wasn't a young boy dreaming of someday being in the laundromat business. I know we have some of those folks out there, mostly the second and third generation owner operators. But for me, I was just looking for a gig. You know, I got my degree in corporate organizational communications and came out of school and looking for that first opportunity in business. And where I'm standing here today, CLA's headquarters is about, I don't know, 10 miles from where I grew up. And when I started to look for work, I'd heard a lot about, you know, sort of trade associations and nonprofits, especially in the context of needing communications professionals, marketing professionals, and that sort of thing. So it was always sort of in the back of my mind that association might be a good place to land with my first job. But sure enough, I saw, this is how old I am, Jordan, I saw an ad in the paper and responded to, you know, so I started my gig here really is my first job out of school as at that time they called the communications specialist, and had a chance to be mentored by CLA's communications director at the time, a guy named Dick Torp, who was an old school, like, newspaper man, like Northwestern University grad, and was, sort of one of those guys you could picture with a fedora and the little press pass in the brim of his hat, and learned a lot from him about writing and communicating with folks. And that was sort of the beginning of my laundry education, is really to take that job here. And that was almost 29 years ago, 29 years next month. And as I got into it, I started to write for our magazine, which at that time was the Journal of Coin Laundry and Dry Cleaning, as now you guys know as Planet Laundry. Wrote press releases, just got engaged in some of the work that we did here as a trade association, started to meet mentors in the business from a laundry education standpoint, kind of transitioned into director of communications, and then I had an opportunity to get into some of the management aspects. I was sort of the deputy executive director for a couple of years. And around, I guess it would be 1999, our executive director at that time, John Vasilides, who's a great mentor to mine and just spoke with him just in the last week or so. Jordan, he's a lifelong laundromat business broker. He's probably bought and sold more laundromats than any person alive.
Wow.
And he was, he was moving on, and the board of directors here gave me a great opportunity as a younger guy. I think I was 29 years old to take the role as president and CEO. And so I've had, you know, no direct experience running a laundromat, but you add up the 29 years and 2.5 million miles on American Airlines and trips all across the country and around the world, not just talking about laundromats and best practices, but more importantly, listening, you know, visiting stores, hearing from people that have been successful. So I kind of see my job in part with the association is try to synthesize all that information, those relationships, what I've learned, and put us in a position through the association to share that with all of you to help the industry do more and get better. So I've had an incredible opportunity over this time. And so it's not a terribly exciting story, but I started at the ground level and now going into my 21st year as president and CEO.
Started from the bottom. Now you're here. I like it. Right at the top, right at the pinnacle. I'm curious, what was it like as a 29-year-old to move into that role as president and CEO of a pretty big association? I mean, that it seems like that'd be a little bit scary, but what was it like for you?
Well, look, as you've probably found out in your business life, new opportunities can sometimes be scary. And so you have equal mixes of excitement and dread. You might have that imposter syndrome creep into your mind. For me, it was just really just a great opportunity. And I remain incredibly grateful to our volunteer leadership that really gave me an opportunity that maybe I didn't qualify for at that time. As a practical matter, as a manager, I had a staff of 8, 9, 10 additional people at the time, all of whom were older than me. I think 9 out of 10 were women. And so I had to, really try to accelerate my management skills and my, ability to relate with employees and really do that in such a way that I could hopefully gain their confidence, gain their respect, because I'm sure they may have been looking at this like, well, this guy becomes president. He was the one who was sitting in the worst desk over by the water cooler not too long ago. And now he's got the executive office. But the team here was great. The volunteers were so supportive, not only with the laundromat education, but with just how to do business. I've told people many times, I don't have that MBA after my name, but I kind of consider my MBA working with a board of directors of 18 to 20 laundry industry professionals for 20 plus years. And really the time I spent on the Clean Executive Committee has really been my informal MBA education, learning from folks about how to do business, how not to do business. And I hopefully have been able to pull the best of that together over a period of time.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome way to learn how to do business from, the people who are doing it, people who have been doing it. And that's one of the big reasons that I started the podcast, honestly, is talking to people like you and a lot of these other guests that I've had who, have had their huge successes and their big failures and, are willing to share those and teach me and teach everybody else listening some of the lessons that they've learned along the way. And I think that's a really great way to learn business. School of hard knocks, a little bit of business ownership that so many of us have gone through. And so learning from that is a great way, I think, to shortcut some of those lessons so you don't have to learn the hard ones, or at least not Absolutely. All the hard ones yourself. Yeah.
So. Well, believe me, if you've made a mistake by that time, you hopefully have a friend or a mentor who's made the same mistake or recovered from the same mistake. And so you've got some relationships to rely on. And so believe me, there are times where I feel like I've missed some of that so-called book learning, in this case, maybe in an MBA track or something like that, but I hope to make up for it with relationships and the real world experience and being able to, pull together the best possible solutions when we do run into challenges.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm curious. I mean, you've been in this role for a really long time. What are some of the big challenges? I mean, you've seen a lot, the industry has gone through a lot. I'm sure you've gone through a lot from being 29 running an organization like this, up until now. What have been some of the challenges, for you personally and or maybe for the industry over the last 20 or so years?
Well, you're right, Jordan. I mean, it's changed a lot. This industry has changed a lot since 1992, I guess, if I'm doing my math right, when I first got introduced to it. You know, certainly there's aspects that remain the same, but there's certainly been a lot of growth. And I like to think the organization has had a lot to do with the sort of what I'll say professionalizing of the industry. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that only accelerate here recently with technology and with newer ideas, new people getting into the business, different calibers of folks with different backgrounds. And I think it's all works together to bring the industry to the next level. I think when you're running a small nonprofit, dollars and cents are always on your mind. You know, level of participation is always on your mind. Being able to work effectively with an ever-changing group of very independent-minded volunteers, you can imagine, is sometimes challenging. But I'd say that, you know, the last couple of years, I think some of the main challenges have been, you know, just making sure that our organization can continue to evolve to sort of match what's happening in the industry and still remain relevant and remain a valuable resource to people in the industry. You know, in the sort of the trade association world, certainly 30 years ago, is very much a top-down scenario. Okay, well, you're the industry authority. It's very deferential. You know, that's where you get the information. And as evidenced by your podcast and a lot of things going on today, you know, information is more dispersed and has more resources, and there's more places from which that comes from. And again, I think overall, that you know, results in better educated folks in our industry, but it also poses challenges for how do we best continue to do what we do here. And sometimes with the trade association, some of the benefits can be somewhat less tangible than a specific product or service. And so that's another good challenge, is to help people better understand the role that we play and what we can do working together to make this a better industry. You know, that's the end goal. How do we make this a better, more profitable industry that takes better care of the tens of millions of families that come to the laundromat every weekend?
Yeah, I love that. And yeah, I think you're right. Like, there's been so many changes in the industry, you know, from, you know, I mean, shoot, man, since 92, the world has gone through a lot. You know, we went through, you know, 9/11, we went through the 2008 economic crisis. Obviously, this last year has been, again, unprecedented and mm-hmm. has shaken everybody up. You know, even our industry, you know, maybe not as bad as some other industries, but, you know, we've all felt that. I'm sure you guys, even as an association, have felt the effects of that, because pretty much everybody's been touched, right?
Yeah. I mean, people talk about our industry being recession proof. I've always said, well, we're recession resistant. Just a little nuance.
Big difference, yeah.
In the term.
It's a big difference, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been through those economic cycles over that period of time, and it has been a very resilient business. Not necessarily easy, but resilient. In the last year or so, what I told our team here when COVID arrived was, if we don't step up now to support our members and to support our industry, when are we going to do that? Mm-hmm. Right. This is when the need is arguably the greatest that we've had, at least in my 30 years, and maybe in now the 60-year history of the organization. You know, so we had to step up and provide that help, regardless of maybe cash flow slowing down, or people not being able to pay their dues right away, or maybe we had some magazine ad contracts that may have been canceled. Mm-hmm. But we said, look, we have to deliver for the industry. And I think that the work that we are able to do from an advocacy perspective to maintain that essential status state by state by state by state, and then ultimately being able to be added to the federal guidance for essential, which we were not on that list. We were not on that list, and it was very expensive and very difficult to get our names added to that federal guidance. And in retrospect, now looking back a year later, Jordan, it's not hyperbole to say that that saved this industry $1 billion or more. Hey, if we're a $4 or $5 billion a year industry, and we're able to keep the doors open for that two, three, four, 5 months that so many businesses were in complete lockdown. Mm-hmm. I like to think that, you know, collectively with us working together and have an organization in place, was able to retain that revenue, keep doors open, and keep this industry firing off. And we've always known that we were an essential business. It does a little bit more kind of esoteric over time, like, well, we're, you know, we're important, or, you know, and I've always talked to legislators about us providing a basic public health service, but this brought it into very sharp focus and made it really a opportunity to double down on the value that all of you bring to your customers and bring to the communities. Clean clothes, hygiene, that dignity and respect that comes from being able to have clean clothes. And in the pandemic, it was probably the greatest challenge we've had as an industry. And I'm just incredibly proud as to how well all of you responded, how well you adjusted and modified operations and stuck to it, because it would have been easy to curl up in a ball and say, well, we'll just wait till this is over. But our industry really stood up and stood out as a result. And I think that that is some momentum that's going to carry us a long way into the future.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great way to put it. And I think a lot of people did really step up and were able to adapt. I'm sure you talked to a lot of owners too. I talked to a lot of owners and, you know, people were hurting for, especially mm-hmm. early on there, people were hurting, you know, and not really knowing, nobody really knew what was going to happen, not just with our mm-hmm. industry, but with our world. Mm-hmm. Right. And it was mm-hmm. a little bit of a scary time.
Sure.
But I do feel like laundromats were, you know, they were one of the businesses that mostly remained open the whole time, but they also just became, they became places of refuge almost for people in the community, because everybody was holed up in their houses, right? And mm-hmm. laundromats were a place where they could come and proactively do something to better their situation, right? Mm-hmm. And I think even just the mental boost that gave people during that time, just from customers I talked to and other owners that I've talked to, I think was a big deal. So,
well, yeah. I've always felt that, you know, we are a neighborhood business. Mm-hmm. I like to say that, you know, the neighborhood laundromat is a mirror held up to the community, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to get a feel for that neighborhood, you want to get a feel for that community, pop into the laundromat. That's where you're going to see the people. That's where you're going to see the vibe and get a sense of what that neighborhood is all about. And so I think, as you're pointing out, Jordan, that, you know, sort of community around this mundane chore, let's face it, no one's looking forward to do laundry, but that's part of this elevation of the industry. If we can make it nicer, if we can make it more convenient, if we can bring people more support through that corner laundromat, it really does raise up those families in the neighborhoods that need that help the most.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, okay. So you've seen a lot of change over the last 20 or so years. Out of curiosity, I mean, you, like you said, you talk to a lot of owners, you've been all over, you put a lot of miles, you know, on your mileage card. I don't know. Put a lot of miles behind you and mm-hmm. you've traveled a lot. What about looking forward? Where do you see our industry heading? What's coming up on the horizon you may not know, but yeah, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but out of curiosity, I'm just curious what you're seeing.
Well, we're all experts in our own opinions, but I do think there's some things that we can look at going forward that I think are, you know, fairly concrete. If you look at the prevailing trends before COVID, major uptick in technology. If you look at the greater sophistication in the marketing, if you look at payment systems, if you look at full service and wash, dry, fold and commercial accounts, if you look at multi-store ownership, if you look at sort of new dollars, more than mom and pop investors, but, you know, some bigger dollars expressing an interest in the business, those existing prevailing trends have just hit warp speed, mm-hmm. in my observation. So those are things that have just taken off, and maybe progress that would have taken another 3, 4, 5 years to come to fruition it's happening now, right? Mm-hmm. So we are seeing this boost. And you know, I think a lot of it is underpinned by technology advancements. And when I look at, you know, high tech and laundromat, some people laugh that off. Well, that's an oxymoron, right? This is an analog old school business, you know. Yeah. But if you look at what's happened with equipment in terms of efficiency, we talk about a major difference, you know, from when I started almost 30 years ago, we're using half or less the utilities. Mm-hmm. And if you look at payment systems, hybrid systems, other things that are letting people pay in other ways, you know, that has certainly driven a big part of our growth. The larger capacity equipment has definitely driven our growth. And I think that the technology in terms of being able to manage remotely and collect data, I think that's blown open the doors to multiple store management. And you know very well, you know, there's sort of a limit to how much you can operate you know, for yourself, by yourself in terms of locations. But as this technology comes on board, I think it's going to be more commonplace to see 5 stores, 10 stores, 20 stores. I still don't see a big roll up, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 locations, but I certainly see the, what I've always called consolidation from within. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Jordan adding the second, the third, the fourth location. And mm-hmm. you start to multiply that across the country. And we're seeing that multiple store management. And part of what I love about that is that, you know, let's face it, if you're in it for 5 or 10 stores, you're probably running a better operation, right? Because you have to, right? Mm-hmm. So it's clean, safe, well-equipped, taking better care of customers. So as that propagates and aggregates in terms of the eyes of the consumer, I think we just have an opportunity to bring more people in to use laundromats than ever before. So I have a very optimistic view of the future. And a lot of that is underpinned by the technological advancements that I think are going to help us do the job even better.
Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of the same things. I'm curious, do you think we're coming towards an end of the single store owner? Do you see it going that far? Or do you think that there will always be single store owners? There'll just be more multi-store owners, and those multi-store owners might have more businesses.
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. You know, this, I mean, I can't think of another industry that's as fragmented as our business, mm-hmm. right? So even with all that we just talked about, if we think there are still about 29,000, 29,500 out there, you know, we can count the number of people with 80 or more stores on one hand, mm-hmm. right? The number of people with 100 or more stores, perhaps on one finger. Mm-hmm. So when it's all relative, right? So yes, there is a lot more multiple store ownership, and the number of 10s and 20s and 30s is definitely way up. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, that's just a minuscule amount of consolidation given the total number of units that are out there. So I do think that there will always be a role for the single store owner. If anything, just for the fact that most everyone starts with one.
Right.
There's some exceptions, right? You know, more often seeing people that maybe jump in with 2 or 3 acquisitions, but more often it's a progression, right? You've lived it. You get the first store and you kind of get your feet wet and take a few dents and dings, and you kind of learn some things, and you get store 2 and store 3. And I just think that will always be a part of the evolution of people growing into the business, going from part-time, you know the story, working the day job, working the career job with the one store, working the nights and weekends and really pushing, and then getting to a certain tipping point where that becomes your full-time gig because you've got multiple locations, you can replace that corporate salary. You know, that origin story, much more interesting than the origin story I gave you for me, is really how these you know, great members of ours have really planted the flag, taken good, great care of customers, and are starting to build wealth for themselves.
Yeah. I like that. And I see that too. Out of curiosity, and I mean, you may not know the answer to this one either. I'm going to throw it out there, but mm-hmm. you know, I think for a long time, our industry has had people interested in it who, you know, have the concept of, you know, I come in once a week, collect quarters, that's it. And you know, as well as I know that pretty much never is that the case, right? There's more because right. whenever I tell people, whenever there's, you know, a business and whenever there's people involved, it's going to take a little bit more than that. Right. And there's machines that break down. There's all kinds of stuff that can go wrong. You'll have to deal with. Right. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I'm curious if you think that that message is changing, if that is that, that mentality is going away, if that's still going to be possible for people to kind of get into the industry that way. Maybe like a guy, I talk to a lot of like high income earners who are looking to put their money somewhere, like doctors, lawyers, mm-hmm. engineers who want to put their money into something and they're interested in laundromats. I just talked to a plastic surgeon in Hollywood who wants to, mm-hmm. wants to do this. Right. And, mm-hmm. And I think the concept of it being mostly hands off is what's appealing to them. And the high returns that you can get, obviously. But I'm curious as to, is that going to be feasible for people going forward or you know, maybe specifically for that high income earner demographic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, as you well know, we've had a lot of those high income earners have been in the business a long time, mm-hmm. right? And they either are hands-on with the laundromat business or they hire someone to help them in that respect. So you can imagine from where I sit, you know, I've always outright rejected the word absentee, the word passive. I just don't see any evidence of that. Mm-hmm. haven't seen any evidence of that. Now, is it a simple business? Simple, not meaning easy, but simple. In other words, the keys to operation are apparent. They're self-evident. You know what you need to do. But as you point out, you still need to put in the time and the energy to execute on that. You know, so the simplicity as opposed to complexity of, you know, 100 employees or, you know, lots of reliance on receivables and stocking inventory. And, you know, from that perspective, yes, it's a simple business, but not always easy to execute on. So I think you can spend less time at the laundromat than you might if you're running a Subway or some other kind of small business opportunity. I also think when I talk to our members over the years and when I probe about, well, what you know has you so excited about the business, again, beyond the returns, because you know that the money is always number one, but I hear a lot of flex time. You know, you have to put in the hours, Jordan. You've got kids taking school at home. You've got other pressures on. You got things to do. So you can attend to the laundromats. It doesn't have to be at a prescribed day and time. Mm-hmm. Right? You can work in those hours over the course of your week. And again, what I hear from our folks is I got to coach Little League. I got to take my daughter on the dance competition tour. I got to do those things. I worked my butt off at the laundromat, but I could make those adjustments and have that sort of quality of lifestyle by being able to take advantage of the laundromat industry. So it's I don't think it's absentee. I'll tell you just a quick anecdote, Jordan. This is several years ago. I got an invitation. It was from one of these organizations that puts on these hype conferences. You know, all these passive income, massive passive. You know, make money sitting at home and multi-level marketing, all this stuff. And I just out of curiosity, and I later learned out of defense, I accepted the invitation and I went to actually did it twice. I went to these conferences where it was a hype job. You know, it was just, hey, you're going to make money, you know, show up once a week to collect the quarters. So I took that speaking gig to defend the fact that, yes, this is a great business, but you know, here's the reality. And if you do these things, you can be successful, but it's not sitting at home and collecting the quarters once a week.
What a buzzkill you are.
I was a total buzzkill. This is one of those things with the lights and the music and the guy in the white suit and hyping up all these different opportunities. And I was the wet blanket because I thought I had to protect these folks from you know having that misperception. Now, they only invited me back twice. I didn't get that third invitation. Because I wasn't there to sell anything, right? This is a big, you know, kind of go to the back of the room and buy the DVDs kind of thing. But my point in bringing that up is I think that we do a service to people by telling them, yes, this is a great business, but here's what you need to know, right? There are challenges. You do have to do that. But back to this technology thing and with the high net worth investor, I think that the networked washers, the ability to remotely manage the store, being able to have confidence in the cash control, right? That's always been the main leash that holds laundromat owners to the store, rightfully, is the cash, right? So if you have the ability to monitor equipment, monitor employees, have safety, know exactly what's in the VTM, know exactly what's in the changers. Yes, I do think that people can reduce the number of hours that they're spending, particularly over the course of multiple stores, and really achieve those investment goals. A sidecar to that is I think that there's going to be a burgeoning opportunity for professional laundromat management companies that can put out their shingle and say, yes, plastic surgeon, we'll help you get into these couple of laundromats, and here's a program by which we can help you actually manage the day-to-day. Clear the coin jams, make sure the attendants are showing up, making sure the store is clean. And from that perspective, so maybe that investor's return is a little bit less, but it still is a pretty gaudy routine or return on the cash invested, and particularly on the time invested, even if they've got to pay that extra layer of supervision and management in order to run the store on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. I love that. I'm actually in the process of putting together a management company here in LA with a couple of former guests, actually, between us, we have, I think 9 or 10 laundromats, and, there's other people who we know who want to take a little bit more of a passive approach to it or just don't have as much time. So Yeah, I think you're right about that. And especially as people start scaling out the number of their laundromats, it's going to be way easier to hire almost like a hotel management company, right? Like You get a couple of hotels, you hire a hotel management company to manage your hotels, and that frees up your time because time is the ultimate.
Look at our friends and competitors in the laundry route business, the apartment laundry route business. You've got companies that have million and a half washers under management. Half a million, hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands. So it's not exactly the same thing, of course, but that mentality of being able to manage those locations, not exactly treating them like route stops, but maybe an amped up version of that. I do think that will be in demand. Like you said, not just the person who gets stretched too thin when they hit that fifth or sixth laundromat as an individual, but people that want to have a stake, they want to have an investment in our sector, but don't have the wherewithal to sit at the counter every day and manage the store 40 hours a week.
Yeah. And I think that is one of the ways that, it's been the industry, I think, has been shifting away from that. But I think, when I think about laundromat owners from 30, 40 plus years ago, I think a lot of them sat behind the counters at their laundromat. That was their job, right? It was like a true mom and pop store where that's just what they did. Like, and a lot of owners did that way. And I think less and less so that's the case from just my observation. I haven't done any research on that, but that would just be my
observation. I think that's a fair assessment. And again, it's such a varied industry. We don't, you and I both know people that love being in the store.
Yeah.
Dusk till dawn, and then dawn till dusk again. And they love to chit chat with customers, and they like to tinker and fix machines. And that's their jam. They love it.
Yeah.
There's just a different approach from someone who says, well, look, I'm looking at this more from an investment perspective. I've got cash to invest. I'm looking for the best ROI. So I'm going to spend the time that I need to spend there, but then I'm going to get help. I'm not going to turn a wrench. I've been telling people for years, you can sum up some of this trend in less time turning a screwdriver and more time turning a profit, right? Yep. The kind of that mentality of, let's scale, let's do multiple locations, and let's know how to do those jobs, but better yet, knowing how to find people that can help you do those jobs so you can build.
Yeah. It's been one of the most, I guess, encouraging and surprising things about doing this podcast is talking to people all over the world who own laundromats and seeing the diversity in the ways that they run their laundromats, right? We had, Jacob on the podcast, he runs a YouTube channel there. I Fixed It. He loves to be hands-on. He's in his mat and just loves that. And then, Show 50, I just interviewed a guy who he's never seen his laundromat. He just moved into his RV and he's traveling the country from here in California, and his laundromat's just outside of Atlanta and he's never seen it. Right. And those are way different style and everything in between. So the diversity of it is pretty cool that you can run and run successfully in whatever you think successfully looks like with this industry. And so that flexibility is really nice. And that really made me think, going back, I meant to say this earlier, but I really like that you use the term flex time as opposed to absentee or passive. I think that needs to get incorporated into our vocabulary more as the flex time, because I think that really does nail it. For example, just today, like I have a pretty busy day today, right? We jumped on this call at 8 a.m. I've got stuff going on with the kids later. We had a little neighborhood socially distanced birthday outdoor party for a neighbor a little bit later. So we got like a lot going on today. So I just got up at 4 a.m. and I went out to my laundromat, did my stuff that I needed to take care of, made it back here in time to walk my kids to school and then jump on a call with you. And I can do that, right? I don't have to be there at a specific day or specific time. And getting up at 4 a.m. to go to the laundromat's not ideal always, but I can do it if I have other things that I want to do. So
absolutely.
Flex time. Let's keep that term going, because I like that.
Yeah, it's the truth. And I can remember we even did a membership campaign years ago where we were, kind of featuring our members, but they weren't, the stock photos of the person leaning on the washing machine. It was, people that were out fixing go-karts and people that were taking kids to Little League and people that were had their feet up at the beach. And it just trying to emphasize that our industry, it's a means to an end. No one's here for the love of doing laundry, right? Well, maybe there's a couple
of people,
people that are obsessed, but it is a pathway. When I do see those old timers, Jordan, one of the things I hear a lot is, just a little laundromat, but you know what? It put two kids through college, just a little laundromat, but it helped us, navigate a family of six. And I don't know what we would have done if not for the laundromat, or it gave us the chance to travel, or we got a cottage, summer cottage, or, so in other words, it wasn't about the glam and glory of running the laundromat. It was the opportunity to work hard, make an investment, make a great return, and then use that as the launching pad to pursue your real passions and the things that you want to do for yourself and your family.
Yeah, I love that. And, the concept of lifestyle design is really popular right now. And I think when a lot of people think of lifestyle design, they're thinking like Tim Ferriss, like go live somewhere else and, dance your days away and sit on the beach or whatever that the case might be, right? But lifestyle design is designing a life that you want to live, right? And so if that's fixing go-karts with your kids, if that's coaching your kids' little league team, right? And in that sense, I think that laundromats can be a great lifestyle design business. And this guy who, Tom in episode 50, who's traveling the country in his RV, while owning a laundromat that he's never seen across the country is a next level of that lifestyle design. It doesn't have to be that extreme, but that flex time gives you the ability to design life the way that you like it. And I like thinking of it that way. Flex time. I'm going to use that more often. I like it.
All right. You got it. Use it.
Yes. Okay. So, we're talking about all this stuff, right? So you've talked to a lot of owners and you've been in this industry longer than most people have. So can you give us some like tips on how do you build a good business? And then once you have a good business, how do you grow it? Cause I think, I talk to a lot of owners who especially this last year, have been struggling, right? Their income has been down, or, you know, they don't have money to reinvest in their laundromat or whatever the case may be. And they might be listening to something like this. Well, that's not what my life looks like, right? I'm trying to like duct tape my laundromat back together or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you could give us, you know, just maybe what are some tips of being, you know, running a solid laundromat business and, you know, and growing that into something that can help you design your life the way you want it.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, that's one of the things that probably hasn't changed a whole lot over the last 30 years is, you know, some of these basic underlying principles. And you had kind of previewed this question for me, and I'll just tell you just the first couple of things I scratched out in no particular order about, you know, kind of recipes for success. You know, we've had a great webinar we filmed right here yesterday on creating an attendant training program. And we had a couple of our peers, Ken Barrett and Yvette Morton Williams, came on and just talked about how they put their program together. And what it was just top of mind for me, Jordan, was just invest in the attendant training. And that's dollars and time. And it's not just, all right, welcome to your new job as a laundromat attendant. Go work a shift with Sally. She's my best attendant. You're going to work a shift together and then off you go. That's what I'm seeing among best practices is having an actual program, having a protocol, having policies and procedures, and investing the time and energy to have the best possible attendance. Because, you know, we talk a lot about new investors and people getting into the business. And one of the several things I try to say to kind of sober, that view is, look, you're going to spend a couple hundred to several hundred thousand dollars. And the one person who has the most to do with your success is the minimum wage attendant who's visiting with customers every single day.
Yeah.
Right? It's not you. We just talked about that, right? You're not going to be there all the time.
Yeah.
So I think that we need to reapportion the amount of time and energy we put into having the best attendant. So that was top of mind tip from just from yesterday.
It's good advice. Good advice.
Yeah. The modern thing that I popped on here as it relates to promotion and marketing is there's a lot of things you can do. We can help you, Jordan. You can help customers with the marketing. But the one thing you need is a perfect Google listing, the Google Maps, Google My Business. If you're going to get one thing right, make sure that the people that are looking for you and they're looking for you on their smartphone, mm-hmm. that they can find you. And it sounds rudimentary. It sounds like the bar is low. But if you do that, that's a distinct competitive advantage in the laundromat business because most of your competitors are not doing that. How much does that cost?
Free. Yeah, zero.
And even if you hire someone to help you with it, you're not talking big bucks, but we're talking about a big return.
Real quick. I mean, I love that. And as somebody who owns a marketing and website design company specifically for laundromat owners, I would say that having a good, solid Google My Business listing that you keep up to date is more important even than your website, because
I would agree.
Most people are going to go on their phone to their Maps app or to Google and search laundromat near me when they're looking for a laundromat. And whatever laundromats pop up on that map or at the top of Google there, that is where they're going to go first, right? And if mm-hmm. they come to your mm-hmm. store first, you have the opportunity to keep them as a customer, right? And most people aren't looking for mm-hmm. your website first and foremost.
Well, I mean, it's nice to have everything. Nice to have a holistic campaign. And, you know, we've been offering marketing assistance for 20 or 30 years, everything from the old postcards to door hangers. And now, you know, with our AMP program, doing some of the same things with websites and mm-hmm. optimized online listings. And it's just an absolute must. And you can't tell me, you know, look, we're not too far afront of when, you know, laundromats did zero marketing. It was a build it and they will come, you know, and I think that is really a significant competitive advantage today to have your act together when it comes to that simple digital marketing. So get it from Jordan, get it from us, get it from all, you know, multiple other companies out there, but just do it, mm-hmm. get it done and your business will benefit.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Sorry to interrupt you, but
no,
I thought that was a great point. The Google My Business was a great point.
So. Yeah. And just when we're talking about, let's talk just a minute about marketing messaging is, keep in mind that I think that we're selling time savings and convenience and we're selling clean clothes. Mm-hmm. Two things that rarely come up in the marketing messaging in our industry.
Yeah.
It's Dollar Tuesdays. It's half off of this or free load or free. And we're not talking about the fact that we get your clothes cleaner, right? And we can get it done faster, you know? And so when we're thinking about the messaging, don't revert to selling on price, because if you're a good laundromat owner, you can't sell on price because you're doing too good of a job. You have well-trained attendants, good equipment, a clean environment, and those things conspire to make sure that you have to get a fair vend price. You know, so will there be price shoppers? Yeah, they can stay in their apartments and do laundry there. They can go to a crummy laundromat down the street. But if you infuse that into your marketing, that this is a better place to do the wash, I think that's a more powerful message. And, over the years, we've done some consumer research. What are laundromat customers looking for? And we did it several years ago. I kind of took those results from that survey and I synthesized it into kind of a motto. And I'll try it out on you, Jordan. Laundromat customers want time savings and convenience in a clean, safe environment that's close to home. One more time. Laundromat customers want time savings and convenience in a clean, safe environment that's close to home.
Yeah. I mean, there's not really much more to it than that, right? Like that's.
Yeah. 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 And if you ask laundromat owners, they want price, they want price, they want price, they want price. Well, that's kind of what we hear. And yes, there are price shoppers, but you know, the lion's share of customers looking for value, right? You know, and I think if you're going to do the marketing, let's make sure that that messaging gets across clean clothes, saving time, and taking good care of your family.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that I've felt this and I see this all the time in like the forums and the Facebook groups and everything where we're afraid of price. Like as owners, generally speaking, like we're afraid of price. People are afraid to raise their prices. I've been afraid to raise my price, you know, and it's a genuine fear. But, you know, what you're saying, what we've had so many of the top operators that we've had on this podcast have all said the same thing. We don't compete on price. We offer valuable opportunities for customers to save on time and convenience, and we charge for it, like because it's a good valuable service that we're providing. And that message has been consistent over and over and over. And I think that I'm saying we because I'm speaking to myself too, but like we need to not be afraid of price and raising those prices because our costs keep going up, right? Like you mentioned earlier that the technology has you know, basically cut our utility usages in half over the last 30 years. Well, it's a dang good thing because our utility usage is probably 20 times higher than they were 30 years ago, right? Like,
yeah, the rate.
They're going through the roof, right? And we're paying those utility costs. So we cannot be afraid to charge more in order to, you know, keep our business afloat. Like if our business closed down, all the people that come to it they're going to have to go further. It's going to be less convenient and less of a time savings for them. So do yourselves and your customers and community a favor and keep your prices where they need to be. Jordan, well, look, myself.
No, look, you know, and again, we're, you know, as a trade association, we have to be careful how we talk about price in terms of our tax exempt status and not overstepping on antitrust or anything like that. But we can talk about successful strategies. We can't talk about, hey, you ought to charge X for a 20 pounder. Now we have all that data in our annual survey. You know, people go on the Facebook groups and elsewhere and wonder about, well, what's the average price of this? I'm like, well, we have the data for 25 straight years. We can give you that benchmark. But if we made this list of the 100 best laundromat owners in the country, and maybe I know 98 of them, you know, there's not going to be one person on that list that is the discounter in their market. And a good chunk of them are going to be the price leader, no doubt, but there'll be zero that are the discounter in their market.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just good, good knowledge to have. And, you know, I just speaking to anybody out there who is the discounter in their neighborhood, like this is not to disparage anybody, but this is to give insight that the real value in your company is the value that you provide to your customers, not the price cut that you give to your customers, right? You sell yourself short and you sell your business short if you're providing value for your customers and not charging enough for it. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's where the focus needs to be. And you know, that's what I hear consistently over and over from top operators is focus on providing value for your customers. Don't focus on being, you know, the low price leader in your neighborhood.
Well, sometimes what some of those stores do, Jordan, is they're really good at making a volume, mm-hmm. but they're not good at making a profit.
Yeah.
And, you know, an educated buyer, you know, into your world in brokerage, they don't care about the gross. Nor should they.
Right.
You know, all that matters is the net. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to maximize that net if you're the low price leader in the market.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I think that's a huge, and I love the marketing message that, you know, that where we miss the mark all the time. You know, and there's something to be said to do promotions where you're discounting, you know, certain days of the week and stuff like that.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
But that, I mean, just straight from the data, right, is from the consumer surveys that you guys have done is saying, hey, people are looking for time savings and convenience. So, you know, marketing 101 is find out what the customer wants in their own language and just tell them their own words back to them, right? And you're going to connect with them on a level that they didn't even anticipate because you are speaking their language literally. So I love that.
Well, the survey that we did, and I had the joy of being able to sort of write the survey, and I gave like these 9 characteristics of why you would choose a laundromat. And we asked consumers to rank them in order of importance. And price was like 7th out of 9, you know, maybe in 1 year it was 6th out of 9. 1 year was 8th out of 9. And what people wanted, and if I can remember this off the top of my head, the number one thing that consumers told us they wanted, having enough machines available when I need them, was number one.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two was feeling safe and secure.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we tend to, like you said, have a narrow vision on Venn price, mm-hmm. but the consumers are telling us that it's in that bottom half of considerations behind availability of equipment, a clean, safe environment, and several other factors that come to mind before they worry about what the price is.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to know if you have a super dangerous laundromat that you're probably going to have machines open. So customers will be fine with it because their number one is they want machines open, right? It's only number two that they want to be right.
Yeah. None of those factors exist in a vacuum, Jordan. You got to have, you know, hopefully you're hitting on all, checking right. all those boxes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's true, man. I think that, you know, having a safe place, I mean, right. The basics, right, are having a clean place. Like nobody wants to come clean their clothes and then leave a dirty store. Yeah, you just don't feel like your stuff is clean, right? You got roaches walking around and stuff. This mm-hmm. is like my store when I took over my very first mm-hmm. one. There were roaches the size of my face in there. And I'm like, well, who's going to come do laundry here? I'm not. I don't want to bring one of these things home in my laundry, right? Like keep it clean, keep it lit, you know, keep it safe. And that sometimes, depending on where you're at, is easier said than done. And again, going back to that not being passive, for me in my first laundromat, it was a dangerous place. I knew it was like not a great neighborhood. I did not know it was like outright dangerous place when I took over it. And it took a lot of time and a lot of effort to clean that place out, but you got to do it, right? It's got to be a safe place. Cause that's, you know, like you said, that's top priority, mm-hmm. In that top half. So, you know, focusing on those basics, in, you know, keeping machines working, keeping your coin changers, if you're still in a coin store, keeping those full, making sure there's coins available, which sometimes is easier said than done in those unattended stores. You know, I talk to people, and this happens in my unattended store, and I talk to people all the time who people come by crazy amounts of quarters for whatever reason, right? It can be hard to keep them full, but you got to do it, right? If you got to go to the bank an extra time a week, you know, all these basics, you just, like you said, it's simple, but it's not always easy, but you got to stay on the basics, keep doing the right things over a long period of time. So love that. I mean, we've mentioned some CLA research. Have you guys been doing any research recently or anything new coming out? Just out of curiosity, what you guys are doing. That's one of the things I like most about the CLA is that you guys are, you know, try to keep your finger on the pulse of things. You're always asking questions of owners and customers and vendors and all that. So out of curiosity, you guys have anything going on lately?
Yeah, there's a couple things I can mention. We're just about to field for our 25th straight year, our industry survey, which gives annual data on vend price, equipment mix, expense ratios for utilities, for payroll, for rent, really all the basic things that we're doing. And so we think it's important to spend the money. And again, this is not an online poll. You know, we hire a professional research company that does the statistically sound surveying, and we make sure that we're investing in good data for all of you. And so that's something that we publish every year. It's free to members annually as part of your membership. It's in our store. I think it's less than $100 if you're a non-member that wants to buy a copy, but you don't have to guess. You know, the data has been gathered and aggregated, and we can, you know, have the ability to look at it on a multi-year basis. Another thing I'll mention is especially with COVID, we started doing a lot more kind of a SurveyMonkey style pulse survey. So we were reaching out to you in the beginning of the pandemic and finding that the average store was down 30% in those first couple of months, and then quickly recovered as you got into the end of the year. We did some great survey work in the face of our advocacy on the coin shortage. We did an awful lot of work related to the scarcity of quarters. I was personally engaged with the U.S. Mint, with the Cash Product Office at the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Coin Task Force. And they were looking to us for data. They were looking for the data from all of you saying, I am having trouble stocking quarters. My bank does have them available or doesn't. So we're able to get that information and share it with all of you like we did, but also sharing it with the regulators and legislators that, you know, are involved in these key issues. I guess the third thing I'd say on research is we continue to put out once a quarter, four times a year, a brand new white paper, which is a 8 or 10 or sometimes 12,000 word deep dive into these key industry topics. And so again, those are free if you're a member, four times a year, but they're all available a la carte in our store. So if you want to get the best information on due diligence or demographics and site analysis or leases, or we just did one on commercial accounts. We just released one on writing a business plan. So again, you don't have to guess. You know, we've got a professional, vetted, authoritative resource here that can help you with that. And, you know, part of that goal is to have a distinctive library that has the collective best information and best practices from all the subject matter experts, and make sure you can find that all in one place.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, going back to like what's changing in the industry, and I think that is one of the things is, I mean, the data has been there, right? But I think our world in general, like the biggest companies in the world are all data companies, right? Like even Amazon, it's a data company, right? And you're aggregating data and then using that data to, you know, put the right things in front of the right people to sell to them, right? So data is king right now. And so we need to be making business decisions based on data as often as possible. And that's where, you know, the power of the networked washers, the card readers that have all kinds of data, user data, all that stuff, has so much power because that data can be used to make the right decisions, right? You're not guessing anymore. Right. And so, you know, I love that you guys are doing the polls and the industry, state of the industry research project, the industry survey, and the white papers, and all that stuff, because that data that's like gold, right? It's like, that's how you print money, is you use the data to make your decision. So love that.
Absolutely.
Love that. Well, we got a few little sections that we normally do, and I thought maybe we could jump you in. We talked about a lot of these things already, but I just, you know, maybe just to pinpoint, we have our first section.
Listen up, it's the secret sauce.
Called Secret Sauce.
Okay.
And Secret Sauce is basically, you know, what's a good tip to help somebody take their business to the next level? A current owner, something that they can implement into their business to maybe help them grow their business.
Yeah, I shared a couple of those earlier, but the one that I still have on the list here is networking with your peers. You know, this podcast is a good example of that. And again, when I talk to longtime members of the association, and again, we do all these programs and events and services, and but what they come back to is the biggest value I've had is the people I've met through the association. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's those connections, those friendships, those abilities to talk to somebody who speaks the same language. And so I just would encourage people that, you know, this can be an insular industry. If you don't leave your store, and if you don't go out and make an effort either virtually or in person to connect with other people in the industry, you're just never going to get to the level of success that you'd like to have. So the secret sauce for me is your peers, the other people in the industry. And Jordan, you probably discovered this. I don't know how we can, take credit for it. I don't know that we can, but this industry is very willing to share. You know, people aren't, you know, maybe if you're across the street, that's one thing, but most every store owner is willing to, you know, share information, share best practices, and try to help the next guy. And so that's something that I think has to be part of the ingredients in your secret sauce.
Yeah, I love that secret sauce. And you know, that is exactly what this whole podcast relies on, right? It relies on people willing to come on and share their experience, their lessons, their wisdom, you know, with each other. And I, you know, there's the whole, you know, mantra that so many people spout, you know, you're the average of the five people you spend your most time with. You know, there's and things along those lines, like it's important who you communicate with, and it's important who you take information from. And so if you want to grow your business to the next level, you need to start getting around networking, getting around people who are doing things at another level. From you inside our industry and probably outside of the industry also. So I think that's great secret sauce.
Yeah.
We got another section called Pro Tips.
Pro Tips.
And Pro Tips is directed to somebody maybe trying to buy their first laundromat. Do you have any tips for the first timer, something that maybe they should be aware of or be thinking about or doing before they buy their first laundromat?
Sure. Well, I certainly love speaking to prospective laundromat owners. You may not know this, but we have a program where we sent an invitation. I want to speak to every single brand new member of Coin Laundry Association, and quite often they are first timers. So I'm having these conversations multiple times a week. And so we kind of speak that language. What I'm hearing a lot from people who are looking to buy their first store is kind of that tire kicking and the frustration. I have looked at 5 stores. I looked at 10 stores. I looked at 15 stores in the area. And what I try to tell them is a shortcut for that analysis is talk about the lease first. Everyone wants to talk about the revenue or age and condition of the equipment or, you know, why the person is selling. And again, those are all things you're going to want to discover at some point in your process. But if the lease isn't right, the rest of it is a moot point. Right? The revenue doesn't matter. What equipment's in there doesn't matter. How many parking spaces don't matter. So, you know, when you're going through that arduous process of kissing a lot of frogs, if you can focus on the lease first, and oftentimes that lease, if it is bad, it can be improved. But I view that as one of the more compelling shortcuts for first-time laundromat owners that may be in a little bit of a fatigue stage of looking at a lot of existing stores. Have a laser focus on the lease, because if the lease isn't right, the rest doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think that's really great advice. You know, I do webinars every week, and when we do one on how to buy your first laundromat, one of the things that I'll say in there is, you know, your lease is arguably your most important asset. You know, it's at least as important as your machines, if not even more important than your machines.
More so.
Because because if you have a bad lease, I mean, I can't tell you how many previous owners I've talked to who have, you know, gotten out of the business because they had a bad lease and, you know, their laundromat just couldn't support it. And so, you know, I think that's huge. And finding a good lease is probably even more important than finding a good location, or at least on par with that. Because, you know, that lease is going to be one of your two biggest expenses, right? Between maybe labor might be your other big expense. But it's a huge asset or a huge liability to your business.
Right. And if we flip that for the existing operators, the best thing you can do today to make your laundromat more valuable is to improve the lease, add time, you know, set the terms. Because when it comes time for you to sell, which may be on your schedule or life schedule, you never know what's going to happen. So if you're on that end of the transaction, making your lease longer, making it more competitive is, again, probably more important than you increasing the net. You have to have that lease right, whether you're from the seller's perspective or the buyer's perspective.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. Awesome pro tip. And for anybody looking to buy their first laundromat, you know, that's a great shortcut, and not even just a shortcut, but that's just good, solid advice in general that you need to be looking at. Check out those leases, find out the length left on them and the terms left on them. So awesome pro tip. Thanks for sharing that.
You bet. We have
another section called recommended resources. And obviously the Coin Laundry Association is an awesome resource for owners. Maybe, I don't know if you want to highlight maybe some resources in particular that you guys have, or if you have resources that are not Coin Laundry Association, or I don't know, but do you have any resources you recommend?
I think I can hit on some CLA stuff and some non-CLA stuff, maybe from more of a personal perspective. But from the association standpoint, again, this is an aggregation of 60 years of industry know-how. This is the knowledge base. This is thousands of laundromat owners over decades. And so we're sort of the repository of those best practices and that best information. So that comes through Planet Laundry Magazine, which you can subscribe to for free. Just go to planetlaundry.com. I mentioned the white papers is a great resource. I said yesterday we did a webinar. We're doing multiple topic-specific webinars each and every month that you can enroll and take those courses. Jordan, one of the things that we've really beefed up here in the last 2 years is what we're calling CLA Business Solutions. So again, it can be a little bit isolated running a laundromat. You don't have a lot of help, right? You're wearing all the hats. And so one of the things that we've done is put together the CLA Business Solutions. So we've got vetted, curated, discounted support for your property and liability insurance, your health insurance, getting demographic reports. We just launched a new program with Paychex for discounted payroll processing, our AMP digital marketing, Atmosphere TV, where we're helping you with the in-store video feeds and several more. So what we want to do is be an extension of your business. You don't have the ability to put on a marketing director. You're not going to have a accounting department that's going to go find you the best deals. We have a great program on utility buying. If you're in a market that's that where you can buy deregulated utilities for either gas, electricity, or both. So let us be an extension of your business. You can't be an expert in buying natural gas and finding payroll processing and figuring out how to do the best website, you know, but we can help you do that through CLA Business Solutions. And that would be another resource you could find on our website at coinlaundry.org. On more of a personal basis, on recommended resources, a couple things came to mind. I'm a believer in just recent years, you know, an old dog learning new tricks, is I've really tried to take advantage of executive coaching. And you might automatically think that that's priced out of your range. Don't assume that. I have found that, you know, having a coach, just like anything else, can be really helpful. And I tend to kind of change up coaches with different perspectives and different approaches. A friend of mine happens to run the International Coach Federation. So you can go to their website. They have a great tool for finding accredited local coaches based on topic of interest or price point or the way you like to learn. You know, even though you say, I'm just a laundromat owner. No, you're a small business entrepreneur. You could benefit, I think, from coaching just like I do each and every week. So the coaching, I think, is something that I'd like to share as a recommended resource just generally.
I love that. I know nobody's brought that up before. I really love that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's like, you know, who couldn't benefit from having a good coach? And, you had asked about maybe some book recommendations. I don't think I've got anything, super secret for you, but, actually through one of my coaching engagements, I really took a deep dive into, Simon Sinek and his book, mm-hmm. Start With Why. Yeah. You may have seen it through, I think it's the third most watched TED Talk ever, from Simon Sinek. And I just think that that's a great book, or watch the video or both, about just really understanding what makes your business tick. Why are you there? And using that as the platform for driving your decisions in the business and making sure that you're taking the best possible care of your customers. So those are a couple of recommended resources that I'd be happy to share.
Yeah, I love that book. And I think that's great for anybody looking to buy their first laundromat. Maybe go check that book out first before you pull the trigger on that, because that's a great book. And it really digs deep into, you know, what your motivation is and if your motivation is going to line up with, you know, owning a laundromat, you know, because that's a big question. And I see a lot of people who, you know, buy a laundromat and a year or two later, they're out of it because it didn't line up with what they were looking for. So, you know, start with why. And also I think that's a great resource for current business owners too. Like you mentioned, so great.
Yeah.
Great
recommendations. Yeah. And starting with why, maybe that could be a segue for me to talk about these signs behind me here.
Yeah,
and
that's where I was going next.
Laundry Cares Foundation. Cause for me, this has had a lot to do with why. And so, the short version is myself, other friends in the business, we just feel an immense amount of gratitude for this industry and the livelihood that it's provided. You know, the way I look at it, my career for almost 30 years starts with that mom dropping a quarter in a washing machine, you know, and those families are often from under-resourced neighborhoods that we serve. And it got us thinking about what could we do to give back and support the families that have been supporting our businesses all these years? And so we created a separate foundation, the Laundry Cares Foundation, really with that mission of giving back to the families that support our businesses. And as we've dug deeper into that work, we found that we really have a unique opportunity because we are a channel. We are a conduit for connecting resources with the families that need them most. If you talk to people that are engaged in literacy, people that are engaged in healthcare, people that are engaged in providing resources to low-income families, what they'll tell you is these families are hard to find, right? There's help available, but it's just hard to connect with them based on those families are busy and they got multiple jobs and they're often sort of dispersed. And we said, yeah, we know where they are. We know where they are every week. Mm-hmm. And we have this tremendous opportunity to connect them with resources. You know, so our three pillars real quickly are our free laundry and literacy days, where we put on or encourage you to put on a day of free laundry, but build that with perhaps free food, free soap, and connections to local organizations, whether it's a WIC clinic or a health literacy group or a financial literacy group. Or a reading campaign group to, you know, come to the laundromat and help connect those customers with the resources that can help them. You've probably talked to the Williford family. Mm-hmm. A quick anecdote from those guys is, you know, they had it one of the breast cancer awareness charities approach them about setting up a table on a Saturday afternoon. And the net result of that was they had more signups, more connections with at-risk women than they had found in any other outreach that they've done. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do with the foundation is activate this continuity, this connection that we have to the communities that need the most help. And our primary effort has been this one over here, which is the Laundry Literacy Coalition. Talk about oxymorons. But knowing that, you know, the families and their kids that are coming to the laundromat are behind when it comes to kindergarten preparedness, reading at the third grade level by third grade. Mm-hmm. They often live in book deserts. I take for granted with my 10-year-old, we got more books than we can, stack up in any one place. So delivering books, is an important part of that laundry and literacy day. The second thing is our Family Replay Learn Centers, which is building a mini library space in the laundromat. We've all got that corner that you can sort of upcycle into a little space with a bookshelf and a table. And if you've seen the videos at laundrycares.org, you see that it is a game changer. It lifts up those families. Your attendants hold their heads a bit higher. You feel a greater sense of purpose in your business as a laundromat owner. And it's delivering real measurable help in the communities by having those connections. And then we partner with local library systems and other folks that can come in to read stories. The third pillar is a disaster response and recovery. You know, we know that when there's a hurricane, a tornado, some kind of natural disaster, there's ready help when it comes to finding people a hot meal, a place to stay. But laundry is one of those really acute needs that's really hard to match and solve right away. So that's the part of our foundation that we're working hard to develop further. But all of you are in a position to provide that type of support. We get calls from FEMA. We get calls from other relief organizations because they really need access to laundromats in the wake of those storms. So the way that all of you can help, go to laundrycares.org. One of the things you can do for free, Jordan, is just simply enroll your locations in our Laundry Cares network. It's free. Put in your locations, and all you're doing is raising your hand and saying, I'm a community-friendly laundromat. That's the only commitment you're making. But as we work with local partners and have opportunities come up, we're able to find you literally on the map. You'll see the map on laundrycares.org, closing in on 1,000 locations. And that way we can connect you with these opportunities to give back to the community. So for a higher sense of purpose, for giving back and taking care of the families that take care of us, Laundry Cares Foundation is a great way for you to live that. And tying it off with new investors, Jordan, what I'm hearing from a lot of people that are new to the business is they're looking for that corporate social responsibility. They're looking for getting into a business where they can have a real impact. And so Laundry Cares has actually made our industry that much more attractive to new investors because there's a built-in CSR program, a ready-made banner for them to help the community.
Yeah, I love that. I love, you know, I think that, you know, the two biggest reasons that I think that I hear people wanting to get in this business is one, you know, the time and money freedom kind of that flex time that you can have. But number two is that you can do something good for your community, right? And so I think that Laundry Cares does a great job. I love the three pillars. You know, those are all huge needs. And people don't think laundromats when they think of community outreach, when they think of, you know, disaster relief, those kinds of things. But, you know, as we've seen over this last year, you know, laundromats can play a huge role in all of these things. So I love that there's an organization out there getting us together and empowering us and giving us the opportunities to, you know, to give back to our communities and to help, you know, our communities in times of need even. So, and just in general, not even just in times of need, but just in general. So.
It's a real honor to do this work and I encourage all of you, volunteer at a free laundry day event and it'll really change your perspective. And you may have seen our hashtag laundries connecting communities because I think that's really what it boils down to. You know, laundries connecting communities. We have a tremendous opportunity and I would argue an obligation to do this work and to take care of the families that take care of us.
Awesome. Well, Brian, this has been awesome. I'm super, super grateful and humbled that you came on and talked to us about, you know, what it is that you do in at the CLA and Laundry Cares and just sharing all the wisdom and experience of your last, you know, almost 30 years now. And congrats on 29 years next month, by the way. That's a big,
thank you,
big milestone. We'll have to, you know, throw some kind of party or something next year. 30 is, you know, wow.
Or maybe a makeover. I didn't have all this gray stuff when I started out.
Yeah. Maybe you'll have to get, I don't know. Do you get like a midlife crisis for being, you know, being in there for 30 years and you go get a Harley or something for your 30th?
I don't know. I'll be content with getting back on the road and getting out to see everybody again here after the pandemic. But my pleasure to be here, Jordan. I really appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to connect with your followers. And I just hope everybody understands that there is a community in this industry, both from a business perspective and from a charitable perspective. And I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share a little bit about what's going on here.
Yeah. And just real quick, why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you or, find out more information about the CLA, the Coin Laundry Association.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. Just like most things, start at the website, coinlaundry.org.
Not at the Google My Business.
Hopefully our listing is in good stead, but we're kind of national in scope. So coinlaundry.org is a great place to learn about membership, getting engaged, to being part of this community, as well as some of the individual resources. I mentioned laundrycares.org, which is another place where you can learn about the activities of the foundation, how you can get involved. And last but not least, planetlaundry.com. Which is our flagship publication. We've been, we're just now past our 30th year of publishing the best magazine resource in the industry. And so again, if you're just getting your feet wet, you can sign up for a free subscription, print and digital, and get the best information in your hands every month from Planet Laundry Magazine.
Awesome. Well, and those links and all the other links that we talked about, including I'll throw in the International Coaches Federation, all those links that we talked about will be in the show notes. If you're on YouTube, those will be down below in the comment section. So make sure you click through those. Brian, again, thank you so much for coming on. It's been awesome. And we'll definitely have to do this again sometime.
I'd love to do it again, Jordan. Thanks again for having me.
All right. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Cool was that episode with Brian Wallace. Super, super just grateful that he came on and shared with us all this wisdom that he's had from being part of this industry for a really long time. Obviously, he's met a lot of people in this industry. Maybe some of you guys have met him. He's checked out a lot of different laundromats. So very, very cool to get his input and insight into this industry and how figuring out how to help us grow our businesses. That's what he does for a living. So very cool. Again, thanks to Brian for joining us. Every single week, I try to encourage you, pick one thing that you can put into action, big or small, doesn't matter. Action is the key to success. So pick something that you can put into action this week. One of the things that I loved that he said was that he has coaches, different coaches at various times. And I love that. I've been thinking about doing that, finding some coaches for me personally. There's a whole bunch of different kinds of coaches out there, anywhere from, personal training, coaching to, I think he said he's doing executive coaching, small business coaching. There's some free coaching that I've heard of through, I think SBA does that. There's just a lot of different kinds of coaches out there. So for me, I'm going to be looking for my next coach to help me take my businesses, whether that's my laundromats or maybe even here at Laundromat Resource, to the next level. So that could be exciting for me, obviously, but it could be really exciting for you too if we, if we just keep on rolling out some cool stuff that we're doing to help laundromat owners out too. So be on the lookout. Feel free to ask me about my coaching and what that means for you, because that should mean something for you too, I feel like. All right. Anyways, make sure you pick something, put it into practice, and head over to laundromatresource.com/forums. Let us know what action step you're taking based off of these podcast episodes. I think that we would all really benefit from hearing from each other about what action step we're taking and what that means for us. All right. I cannot wait to see you in the next episode of the Laundromat Resource Podcast. Until then, we'll see you. Peace.